My name is Dave Fry. I'm a graduate student at Oregon State University, a master's student, and I'm going to be discussing the top-down effects of wildlife and bottom-up drivers of soils and productivity in intensively managed forests in the Oregon Coast Range. And I'd also like to thank my co-authors and acknowledge them, Jeff Hatton, Thomas Stokely, and Matt Pitts. So first, a little bit of background about intensive forest management in the Oregon Coast Range. These private timber lands are highly productive, producing some of the highest volume of timber production of anywhere in the United States. And much of the timber that's harvested from this region comes from these intensively managed private lands. And when I say intensive management, the typical management regime there consists of clear cutting, followed by vegetation control, and then replanting of conifer seedlings. However, the conditions that lead to this high productivity in timber output also leads to high productivity in early sterile vegetation post-clear cutting, like you can see here. And one of the problems with this, of course, is that this vegetation is highly competitive and it may outcompete the planted conifer seedlings. And so the way that this is handled in management is that we apply herbicides to reduce competition for crop trees. And so what you can see here is the stand on the left is a five-year-old stand that's not been treated with herbicides. The stand on the right is only 5 kilometers away, but has been treated with herbicides, and you can see that there's large differences in vegetative cover between the two. But besides reducing competition for resources for the conifers, there's also the potential that by altering these vegetative communities, we could also be altering litter inputs, potentially with downstream effects on soil productivity and conifer productivity. In addition to vegetation control, it's also possible that deer and elk may be altering litter inputs as well because they're selective foragers. They're prevalent in the Oregon Coast Range where our study is located, and as you can see on the right there, they tend to selectively forage for woody deciduous species, and by doing so they may be altering both the quantity and the quality of the litter that's falling to the forest floor. And by altering this, they similarly to vegetation management, they may be altering soil productivity as well as conifer productivity. And so the questions that I will be addressing today is, well, what is the effect of this vegetation control on soil and conifer productivity? And additionally, what is the effect of herbivore browsing on soil and conifer productivity? And the figure on the right is essentially just showing how I'm going to work through the presentation today. I'm first going to discuss the effects of herbicides and vegetation control and herbivores on the plant communities. I'll talk a little bit then about soil productivity, and then finally, conifer productivity. So to address our questions, we have four 15-hectare herbicide treatment stands that are all located within 5 kilometers of one another, and these are replicated in 7 distinct locations in the Oregon Coast Range. And you can see here on the right, this color scheme will be consistent throughout the presentation. We have a no-spray control, a light treatment, a moderate treatment, which is similar to industry standards in the region, and then also an intensive treatment. Additionally, to investigate the effects of herbivory by wildlife, we have these exclosures nested within each one of these herbicide stands. And so we have a cervid exclosure. In other words, it prohibits access by deer and elk. We have a cervid plus songbird exclosure. And then finally, we have an open access plot. And I also wanted to mention, while we are going to be investigating the effects of songbirds on arthropods and then potential downstream effects of that on decomposition, I'm not going to be addressing that today because just due to the sake of time. So I'll be focusing on herbivory and herbicide control. So within each one of these plots, we collected litter layers, we collected mineral soils from 0 to 30 centimeters, as well as Douglas fir foliar tissues. Also, to orient you, when I talk about the Northern Oregon Coast Range, you can see the figure on the left. That shows where our study is actually located. It's a 150-kilometer gradient, and you can see on the right, it's a little bit hard to see, but there's 4 treatment stands in each of those blocks. So we have this, again, it's replicated over this 150-kilometer gradient in the Oregon Coast Range. So as I mentioned, I'm first going to talk about herbicides and herbivore browsing's effects on vegetation. And so what we see is a pretty clear effect here, and I wanted to point out on the y-axis, vegetation cover can be greater than 100% because it's cumulative vegetation. So we're looking at both understory and in some cases midstory, where some of these shrub species have grown quite a bit over the first 5 years. And so what we could see is that consistently the control had more vegetative cover. The clear cut was performed in 2010, and in 2011 when we started taking measurements, you can see the vegetation was consistently higher in the control. You also see that vegetation tends to decrease in cover with increasing herbicide intensity, as expected. However, interestingly, you can also see that in all these treatments, we did see an effect of herbivory. We can see that the solid lines represent where herbivores were excluded. The dotted lines represent where herbivores had access. And you can see that the effect is most pronounced here in the moderate treatment, where there's the greatest disparity between the two exposures. So we've seen, okay, herbicides and herbivores do impact vegetative communities, and that leads to the question, well, does this impact soil productivity? And so first we looked at the effects of herbivores and vegetation control on the litter layer, and what we can see is that on average we do see higher amounts of vegetation in the control treatments compared to the other treatments, but again, we have a lot of noise here. There was slash and a lot of harvest residuals on site, so there's quite a bit of variability. But again, on average, the control tended to have a greater litter layer mass. But we don't really see an effect of the gradient of herbicides, and we also don't see an effect of herbivory on litter layer accumulation. I do think that the reason that we see this increase in mass, and we also see an increase in depth that's not pictured here in the controls, is basically just because we reduced those woody species pretty significantly. That's the major effect that these herbicides have, is reducing cover by woody species, and that may explain these differences that we do see in litter layer accumulation. However, despite differences in litter layer accumulation, we did not see an effect on concentrations of nitrogen in either soil layer. This is the 0 to 15 centimeter layer, but the same holds true for the 15 to 30 centimeter layer as well. And what I want to point out is that we see a lot of variability here. And that's consistent with the Oregon Coast Range. There are some sites that may be where growth may be limited by nitrogen, and in other cases we have some of the highest concentrations of nitrogen in any soils in the world. And I think that that's an issue here, that it could explain some of the reasons that we aren't able to detect effects of our treatments on mineral soil nitrogen, just because of this great variability that we see in nitrogen in the soil. So now for the rest of the talk, I'm going to talk about what effects did we actually see on conifer productivity. And so what we see here is this is Douglas fir volume after 5 years of growth, and we can see that with increasing herbicide intensity, we do in fact see this response of greater volume growth. It's most clear, of course, in the moderate and the intensive treatment, but also interestingly, we do see that there's a slight effect here in the moderate treatment of herbivory and increasing conifer growth, actually, and here we see it in the intensive treatment even more. And we hypothesize that this could just be that these herbivores are selectively browsing for some of these woody species, potentially increasing access to resources within these stands. So if we see these differences in volume growth for Douglas firs after 5 years, there's three main factors that we would hypothesize that could potentially be impacting this change in volume growth, and that's access to nutrients, access to water, or access to light. And again, I want to point out there's a lot more competition for resources here. You can see a couple of Doug firs sticking out through the vegetation, but again, there's a lot of competition in these control treatments, whereas here in the intensive treatments, there's not much competition, or at least doesn't appear to be much competition for resources. So first we looked at mineral concentrations in Douglas fir needles, and again here we do not detect an effect of herbicides or herbivory on foliar nitrogen concentrations, and we also tested for phosphorus and base cations and still no effect. But what I do want to point out here is that this horizontal line shows the threshold for nitrogen limitations in Douglas fir. So below that line, conifer growth may be limited by nitrogen. And what you'll notice is that the only stands where we detected them to be below this threshold were in the control and light treatments, which I think potentially gets back to this idea that we have this large gradient in nitrogen concentrations in the soil. So there may be some stands where applying herbicides does confer an advantage in terms of acquiring nutrients, but in other cases we may just have high enough native fertility that we don't see an effect of herbicides. So then the question is, well, maybe water availability is influencing growth. And so the way that we looked at that was using C13 to C12, the ratio of C13 to C12 in Douglas fir needles. And so what we see on the left is the expected relationship between water availability in trees and C13 concentrations. And so we would expect there to be more negative values the more water is available to these trees. But what we see here is probably the, what you might consider to be the opposite, right, of the expectations, where we see where there's more competition for resources, we actually see reduced values, which you would think would be consistent with more water availability, but I think what that gets at is actually the final resource that I'm going to discuss, which is light. And so the relationship here is basically that it's been found that leaf shading tends to have a similar effect on C13. So the more shaded a leaf is, the more negative the value tends to be. And so we see here where we have more competition, we also see these values that are reflective of potentially more shaded leaves. And I want to point out that these are five-year-old stands. And so at this point, the trees are fairly small and can easily be shaded out. And so it's possible that over time, as the trees have more higher demands for water and other mineral resources, we might expect that this might shift to a different resource limitation. But at this time, it appears that light may be impacting the growth of these trees. So in conclusion, we do see that herbicides tend to decrease litter layer accumulation. However, we didn't see any effect of herbivory or herbicide treatments on soil or foliar nitrogen concentrations, as well as concentrations of other nutrients in the leaves. And we hypothesize that light may be driving this increased productivity in the intensive and moderately treated stands compared to the control and light stands. And so with that, I'd like to acknowledge some of the people who've been critical for this research, my advisor, Jeff Hatton, Ivana Lowe, the rest of the Forest Soils Lab at OSU and the Forest Landscape Ecology Lab, and our various partners and funders. And with that, I'll take any questions. There is. There's increased mortality, especially in the control treatment compared to the moderate and intensive treatment.
And so what percentage is survival did you say out of 5 years?
I don't have that data offhand, but I can tell you that it was significantly different.
To the point where you might even replant?
Yes, in these stands they haven't, just to keep the treatments consistent, but in some control stands we've actually seen that the conifers have been outcompeted to the point of where they're basically non-existent.
We also have some results from Fall River, about 20 years now, where there wasn't differences in mortality, huge differences in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, but it seems now that the no-veg control is starting to close in. It's all the trees are smaller, they're growing at a faster rate, and that might, you know,
and I think for our stands too, part of it, like in the control stands, we have some that there's a lot of big leaf maple and highly competitive species, and that's where these conifers really don't do well on the control treatments. But some of the other stands, the vegetation's not nearly as dense, and they, you know, the disparity between the control and the intensive treatments isn't nearly as great.
What herbicides?
There was a pretty large mix, and I can't tell you all offhand, but glyphosate was the primary herbicide used. But I do have some tables I could share with you later.
There was a mix.
There was a mix, yes. Mm-hmm. Primarily the target is the woody herbaceous species. So it would be big leaf maple and vine maple are typically the most competitive in these stands. And so that's generally what we target. And in fact, in the intensive stands, they would come back through and do what we call hack and squirt, right? So they actually kill them. Any of those species that re-sprout essentially are then killed. There are some alders. There's not much ceanothus in these stands. We see a little bit, but not much. And the alders, there's really not much, even in the control stands. And we do have N15 data as well that I haven't used yet, which may help get at the idea, because generally the gradient is largely due to the prevalence of red alder coming in after fire events, and so N15 should help us kind of elucidate if that's coming from these from red alder basically up into the needles. Not that I'm aware of, but I would imagine that there will be. It's pretty prevalent in our region. We're not in the regions, these sands aren't in the regions where it's most, you know, most damaging, I should say. But to my knowledge, we haven't been investigating that at this point. Yeah.